Hello world, it's me, Dennis, and today I get to talk with Marnix Powell.
I'm so grateful to get a chance to talk with you because of your journey. And I was thinking, what is in this time when that I get a chance to talk with you, this first meeting, what would be meaningful for us to talk about? What does meaningful when one soul meets another and we want to get as transparent and as clear on your journey and my journey and the intersection that it's happened, what would we talk about?
Well, I think we at least have to get into a little bit of the details of the journey.
You and me, just Marnix and Dennis. What would we talk about that would be meaningful to you and to me?
I like to think in terms of what would be meaningful for the people who listen to this.
Yes, well, I would prefer it to be what's meaningful to me because I want you to change me. I want this experience. Mm-hmm. I want to have enough beginner's mind that it would change me. Because when I look at your journey, when I see your journey into using all outside in order to fill the hole inside, my journey, which my journey has gone through many of the same places that you have, I intersected the 12-step world back in 1996. So many of the journey, the places, if you're familiar with the 12 steps, it's part of the process of doing a 4-step, doing a 5th-step, doing a 10-step every day, doing the kinds of work that is part of seeing that I am no longer a victim. Mm-hmm. And being part of my life. So I would like to I'd like to talk about anything that is about where you are on that journey and what you're learning about yourself now.
Yeah, well, I guess the thing we should do is just get this conversation started and let's see where it goes. That's the best thing to do.
Let's do it.
Yeah, because if you want to come from a beginner's mind, you don't need any goals or targets or conditions or whatever. Just have a conversation, and the stuff that will be useful for you and me will come up anyway. That's how it works. Yeah.
I'm 71 today on my odometer. How old are you?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm 52.
52.
Yeah.
And when you look back, you grew up in Amsterdam?
No, I grew up in Arnhem, which is in the east of Holland.
Yes.
And I moved to Amsterdam when I was 18.
Who was Marnix at 18? Tell me about him.
Oh, he was a very lost, angry, depressed person. You know, I went to Amsterdam in order to... I was coming to Amsterdam to go to college, to study
sure.
law. And I was supposed to... become a member of a fraternity in Amsterdam, and I tried to get in there, and I was there were too many people who wanted to become a member, so I didn't come in.
Yes.
And I went to Amsterdam with my best buddy, who I had known him for a lot of years before that, and we had this plan that we would both be members of the fraternity, and we would both explore Amsterdam and find out stuff about Amsterdam. And he became a member and I didn't. So for the first 3 months, I was on my own in Amsterdam. I didn't know anybody. So I reverted to smoking weed a lot. That's what I did. I felt very miserable, very lost, very lonely.
I want to ask about it, because what I found that when I smoked, because I smoked pot for a number of years till my lungs would no longer handle it. That's also the reason why I quit smoking, because my lungs wouldn't handle it. I would still be doing it if my lungs could handle it. That's just a grace of God. But when I would smoke pot, the thing that would happen to me is that I would immediately connect with God. It was very much of, and I realized that I had a self-judgment that the pot would tranquilize my self-judger inside so that I could then connect with what was really there. What was your experience with getting high?
Well, the first response to that is that you must have been smoking very good pot if you had this, had this connection with God. For me, it's just addiction is a very simple thing. I don't really agree with what the AA and the NA proclaim or what they say about addiction. I don't, you know, for me, addiction is a very simple thing. People don't like to feel uncomfortable.
Right.
So in order to get rid of that, in order to get a feeling of relief or just to come home for a while, to get some distance from the stress we experience in our minds and our bodies, we do all kinds of things. And when we do something that is helpful for a while, we get used to it and our brain becomes a fan of it because our brain loves shortcuts. That's it. And then we are somewhere lost in a cycle. That's all. That's how I see addictions.
But I have to tell you, I've been in program for over 25 years. I've gone to big book studies. I've gone to the thing, and I don't hear a single thing that contradicts what you just said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the thing is that I loved being in AA. I was there for a while because of I loved the fact that I had a place I could go on and bitch about everything, and everybody accepted that. I loved being in a place where I could tell about my ingenious plans to hide my drinking, just to discover that everybody had the same ideas. That's what I loved. What I didn't like is the whole idea that the counting of the days.
Me too. I am so glad to hear you say that. I cannot. That does not help me.
It's a very mean thing, you know, like you haven't been drinking for 73 days and then in day 74 you fall in a bucket of vodka with your head and you drink it. It doesn't matter. What matters is what you do after that. But the whole idea that you lose your days is so cruel. It doesn't
I agree. Yeah. It doesn't help me. No. And it helps some people. And what I believe is you and I are both, I'm a communication coach and you're a coach. So what we do is for our livings, as we are making our ways into the media and the different ways that we're doing, I don't find a single time when one tool works the same for a particular client. They work. I mean, there are areas I can ask them to look at. And it's always to look at ourselves first, as opposed to trying to look outside of that. That's the process. But it's they're different journeys. Each person has a different journey, don't you think?
Yes, yes. And I don't work. I'm a transformative coach, and I don't work with tools or methods. I only work with helping people to understand how we work as human beings. That's the only thing I do.
Wonderful.
And from there, people find their own wisdom, and from their own wisdom, they make good decisions and they have a clear head. And, you know, if I work with people who are addicted, they don't have to quit drinking for me. I don't care, because drinking is not the problem. The problem is that they think they need it. Yeah.
Well said.
So that's why. So everybody can quit drinking for a while, but it doesn't solve anything.
No.
So if you don't get used to your discomfort, you'll find something else. You know, when I went to AA for a while, everybody smoked. They had just found another way to deal with their discomfort.
And this is you are so right. And that's the important part of program, is that stopping the addiction is only the very beginning. It's not the end. Now we have to look at everything that goes underneath in order to be able to live a life worth living, to meet life on life's terms, to trudge the road of happy destiny.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's about relaxing in this human experience we're having, in order, you know. Yeah, and so I love the AA for the fact that it's free and that it's so welcoming to people. But what I doubted, what I found very strange, is that there were people who hadn't been drinking for 15 years and they're still connected to alcohol. They were still bitching about the fact that it was Friday evening and everybody at the company was having beers again and they couldn't. After 15 years, that doesn't show me a person who's cut off from drinking. There's still a connection there. There's still a bitterness there. And I didn't want that. I didn't want that.
Yes.
So I haven't had a drink in 7.5 years. I don't care about alcohol. I don't give a shit about it. I can be in the middle of heavy drinking people. I don't care. Well, there always comes a moment when I don't understand them anymore, because then we're in a different level of consciousness. And then I go home. But I'm fine with that. There's nothing inside of me that wants to get away of the clarity I have right now. And the clarity that I've had for a few years now. There's nothing that the buzz of a cigarette or some weed or a pill or the alcohol can give me that I don't get from life itself. You know, the natural stuff is way better.
Yes. And how do we, not only do I agree with you, but what I have found is that it takes me a journey. Like, for example, when I stopped smoking pot, it took me 15 years before of work on myself, of the work that I did. And I realized had I done better work or I'd done, I might have been able to shorten that time. But just for me, it took me 15 years before I felt as good about myself when I was stoned, when I was sober, as when I was stoned. 15 years. Now that's not a great sales pitch to say, hey, don't worry, put down the pot and 15 years from now, you're going to feel great. Mm-hmm. But that's what it took for me to finally to have compassion for myself in the same way sober from pot as I was when I was stoned. And that compassion for myself is a big aspect of my journey. That self-loathing has been my really at the prime driver of my discomfort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a psychologist, although I've met a lot of them in my life.
I can certainly, you have, and you've met a lot of people in your life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it has become like madness over the last few years. I love to meet people. I love people, and I didn't, you know, before a couple of years ago, I kind of hated people. I didn't trust them. I thought they were always backstabbing me or waiting for an opportunity to do so. So this 52 years had been very interesting for me, and I kind of flipped 180 degrees on the place where I was before, when I was a very cynical, sarcastic, dark, brooding, dominant, aggressive person. And I got the opportunity to find my way back home, I guess. I guess that's what happened. And I'm so grateful for that, that it's one of the things that drives me to do the work I do, to write the books that I write, to do the videos that I do, to do the coaching. And because when you find out how much potential you're wasting while worrying about life, and when you see how amazingly beautiful everybody is around you, they simply don't see it. You want to tell people. You want to show it to them. You want to guide them to the place where they can see it for themselves. And it can be such a powerful thing to do. So I think it's a built-in gift for people to feel good about helping others out. It's like a win-win situation. Yeah.
It is absolutely. I believe that we're wired purposeful. Mm. And that when that disconnect happens, when I feel purposeless, then is when I am, that's when I'm having that disconnect. That's where I feel it.
Yeah.
And when you're thinking about spirit, how does that come to you? How do you think of a power greater than you in your own journey? Because you and Eckhart Tolle had very much the same experience of depression and near suicide and darkness and rock bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he took it his path.
Yeah.
And how would you share yours?
You know, the thing when talking about spirit is like a seed talking about the melon that's surrounding the seed. It's like me talking about spirit. You can't talk about it. I can talk about it, and that I do, and I can talk about it for hours, but you never even come close to what it means.
How could you? It's what Feynman said, that God is larger than the stage. You can never wrap your mind around something that not only we're immersed in totally, but we're part of an active principle of as it's occurring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the thing is, we have all these brilliantly built in science and stuff that helps us find our way back. And one of the things is what we call flow. Many people know that, or being in the zone.
Absolutely.
And what it actually means is that you drop out of your personal thinking and you feel like you're being lived by life, being guided by life, being sent, you know, nourished by life. Like everything is easy. Everything goes exactly as it's supposed to go. You don't worry,
exactly.
You don't think about stuff, and you're brilliant. It's what happens to great musicians and great athletes and everybody, or artists or painters. That's our built-in GPS to know that we are on the good path, or that we are close to what's important to us, close to God.
Yes.
I'm not a religious person, but I don't mind talking about God as long as we're talking about the intelligence behind life.
I'm not talking about religion. Religion is the tool, but it's not, you know, it's not what's really there. It's merely talking about what's really there. I'm much more interested in going deeper than what religion is. I'm much more interested in spirit as the motivating force of my life, you know, the life force, the life energy, my connection, however I connect with source, whatever it is within me. I have a theory just that I play with.
Yeah.
And that the distance between the tip of my nose and the light cone that is at the absolute edge of the expanding universe is exactly the same distance in actual parsecs from the tip of my nose to the center of my soul. So that those two things are balanced, that we're that's the consciousness of what I carry around with me. So I'm responsible for this universe. And this universe and how it reacts with the entire universe, but I'm not. So I try to keep it that way. And so therefore I can let me have order and peace in this universe, Let me see how I can have that connection and purpose and manifestation. So anyway, there's a lot there, but mm-hmm. play with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing is that we will never be able to articulate this thing we call God or the universal intelligence or whatever you want to call it. We can, all of us can experience it. So we know when we know. And that's the profound thing. That's, you know, and that's why I'm so very hopeful with all the people I coach, because I know we all have this connection. We're born from it. We're in it. It's creating us. It's just that we are so in love with our mental world, with our mind, with our intellect, that we seem to overlook it, the thing that's so close to us. It's like it's so close to us that we immediately step over it.
Yep.
So Yeah, and that's what I had a few of these very nice oneness experiences in my life. Not as long as Eckhart Tolle, because he was when he had that, as I think he stayed in the park for 6 months and watching ducks every day. And for me, it was just a few seconds. And it was really cool anyway. It's like the best drug ever. And it didn't really change anything for me at the moment. But a little bit later, when I got very interested in non-duality or Advaita, and started reading about that and started studying that and started to try to use it in my life in order to read or study or Advaita myself into enlightenment or self-realization.
Sure.
Because I read that happened to people. I became very miserable. And one day I was sitting at my desk and I was watching my keyboard and my computer, and I had just watched another video by an enlightened person, video number 10,000. And I was sitting there and I finally suddenly realized that I was the universe watching through Marnik's eyes. And it was what I call my most beautiful disappointment in my life, because, yeah, and it was so profound, but it was very simple at the same time and not really very impressive. And I laughed so hard. This was the thing I had been looking for so long. And it was so utterly simple.
Yep.
But it changed everything.
Of course. Of course. I loved how you said, and when you were talking in one of your coaching sessions, one of your videos that you were talking about, is that when we're talking inside our heads, who's listening? It was so simple. It was exactly the point you were making, exactly the concept. Who is listening to these words? And so I did an experiment one time when I was meditating. I searched inside my consciousness for a place where the words were coming in. And I found it to be a bladder. It was like this little bladder stream of where words were just coming out of that. And so I went inside my brain and I went like this. And I closed off the bladder like it was a rubber bladder. And the words stopped. And I sat there for about 10 seconds. There were no words. There was nothing. I just sat there. It was profound.
Yeah. Well, that's the discovery. You know, what's between the words? And you can read about it. You know, it's in thousands of books. And then you read and think, whatever, it makes sense. But how come I still feel like shit? You know, it's not really helpful. But when you see, it makes total sense. Like, this is what they meant. And you're totally right. You know, and the thinking is an autonomous process. It does whatever it wants to do. But we feel responsible for our thoughts, which doesn't make any sense. Because they're full of shit constantly. Your the personal mind is constantly making predictions that don't make sense, and they never come true. But we never ask it, like, come on, this is the millionth time that you predicted something that doesn't come. You're full of shit. No, we never say that to our personal mind. So it gets away with everything. We trust it like it's the world's most profound source of wisdom. And it's full of shit. It's only repetition. It's this factory constantly creating random stuff.
Yep.
And of course, when we listen to it and when we become entangled in it and when we think it's us, when we get this really intimate relationship with it.
Exactly. Yeah,
of course we go mad.
Yes.
Because it goes everywhere. It's all over the place constantly.
I was trying to... One of the things that I, as I have met people and had conversations with people around the world, there has been one of the most constant themes that I've had at all overall is, I am harder on myself than anyone else in my life. I've heard that one particular phrase more from more people than anyone else. And so I'm wondering about both I can see that in my life, and I can see that, and so I'm wondering about how, what the value of that was, and how we can release that now, or whether or not you even see that as an issue.
No, I don't. I don't, you know, I'm not really interested in psychological stuff, because it's content and it's fleeting anyway. So I'm way more interested in getting to know the system. We experience our thinking in the moment. That's how our life is. That's how our world is created.
Yes.
Thought is energy, and thought is not mental energy. It's also physical energy. So when we think about crappy stuff, we have a crappy feeling.
Yes.
When our mind is restless, we have a restless feeling in our body. So when you start to get an appreciation for how the system works, and it doesn't work, it does work. It works like this every second of the day.
Sure.
You start to realize that the way the human creation is built is from the inside out instead of from the outside in, because we think we respond to the world outside us, but we create the world outside us ourselves. There's no outside world.
No, it's all in here. This is a picture.
Yeah.
There's a picture. What's happening, what looks like across the screen, is actually occurring inside of here.
Yeah. And that's a biological fact, because that's
exactly
how the brain works.
Sure.
But it's also a spiritual fact. You know, we create our own world. We create our own misery. And I don't want to go in a direction of, well, then just create a beautiful world. Just do some positive thinking, because it's crap. If positive thinking really worked, we'd all be doing it and everybody would be happy. Well, look around you, you know. Because something makes sense doesn't mean that it works. You know, does it make, when you say, so we don't have any control over our thoughts. At least I've never met anybody in the world.
I've never met anyone. I certainly have no control over my thoughts.
No.
All right. Let me ask you one of the things that resonated with me about you, because I think that I'm very metaphorical. I need a metaphor in order to be able to that helps me. Whether it helps you or not, it helps me. Okay.
I can give you one.
So in my metaphor, mm-hmm. I have a parlor.
Yeah.
And I'm in my parlor and a thought comes in, and I'm not responsible for the thought that comes in my parlor, but I am responsible for which one of those thoughts I entertain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let me give you my metaphor. Imagine a small town somewhere, and at the edge of the town there is a green field, and on the field is a circus tent, and the circus tent is there every day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody can use the circus tent, so rock bands and the debating club and maybe stand-up comedians visit the city or their town, and they use the circus tent.
Absolutely.
To do their things.
Their venue.
Yeah. So the circus tent is just a space for whatever happens inside it. Sometimes you have a play you like, maybe a tragedy, maybe a Greek tragedy. Sometimes you have a rock band you like. Sometimes you have a DJ in the circus tent and you don't like it. But it doesn't do anything with the circus tent. The circus tent is just a space, what gives room for the experiences to happen. Now, we are the circus tent, but we think we are the acts, the bands, and we get lost in that. But as we start to see that we're the circus tent, that no matter what performs in the tent, it doesn't change the tent. It doesn't do anything to the tent. It doesn't hurt the tent. It doesn't wreck the tent. Maybe if there is a punk rock band, well, something might happen to the tent, but you know, with a very enthusiastic audience, but we're just the space that allows all creation to happen. And it's very impersonal.
Yes.
It really is. But we think it is very personal. That's why you're constantly mad about everybody and everything in our world. So the more you get a feel for the fact that everything changes except for the knowing that you are alive, because that's the only thing that never changes. And it's a very neutral thing, you know, knowing that you're alive. Consciousness itself has no form, no taste, no size. It's a neutral thing. But we need it in order to experience life. And we get lost in the scenes that play out within the circus tent or within the space.
That's beautiful.
And when you start to see that, instead of becoming detached from everything that happens within the circus tent, you start to enjoy it more because you're not so afraid of it anymore, because it's less personal. It's just you see the fleeting character of everything and the fact that it's just energy.
Yeah.
And you start to appreciate it more. You know, like I became way more emotional over the last few years. But I can cry for 5 seconds. Like I have 2 tears and then it's gone. Like, so sometimes
But emotions, when you say emotions, you're only talking about that. There's also the emotions of joy, and there's emotions of gratitude. There's emotions, the emotion is a full wheel. It's not just tears.
No, you have all kinds of tears. And I think it's one of the things, you know, nobody knows why we're alive. We can make that up for ourselves. That's what I like so much.
Because the story.
Yeah, I like my story. I like the story of being an addict for 28 years, being depressed for 20 years, and being so anxious that I was afraid to leave my bedroom for a few months, having panic attacks every day, 100s a day. And I like the idea of transcending that and finding a new way of appreciating life and helping other people with that. Now, I didn't make that up. I didn't make up this journey. I didn't make up the fact that it was really helpful to be addicted for 28 years, because it is. It's very, very helpful as a coach. If you say, I was an addict. I was depressed for a long time. I wanted to kill myself. People can relate so much quicker.
Of course. Because if you have not walked it, that's the thing. I mean, a story like somebody like I look at the stories, however historically accurate, I think that there's something there of Jesus. And it was so cool the way he taught, because he always taught by example. He always said, here, I'll do it first, then you follow. I will show you that I walk this path. I'm not just giving you bullshit. I'm not just sitting there saying, here, you know, here's the way you ought to live. Yeah, and then I look at Gandhi, and I look at Gandhi, or I look at any of the teachers that I would respect over the, and they always do this first. That story of Gandhi that says that poor woman who waited in line for days to get to her child because her child was allergic to chocolate, and she said, please tell Gandhiji, please tell my child not to eat chocolate, it's going to hurt him. He said, come back in 3 days. And she did. And he looked down at the child and said, don't eat chocolate. She said, why didn't you tell me that before? He said, 3 days ago, I was eating chocolate.
Yeah. Well, it's more powerful when you know what you're talking about.
Let me ask you something. Yeah. What is the power? Can you talk about your experience, or how do you talk about your experience of what love is, how it has impacted you, how your sense of it, and how it has worked or not worked as far as in your story?
Yeah, well, I think love is just another word for the spirit and for God and for the universal intelligence. That's how I see it. It just has a nice warm sound to it. That's the thing with love. So I don't think love has any preference or any ideas of how things should be.
I'm just asking your experience. I'm asking your experience when we think about how did it transform? Is it something that you, because I work with love in my own consciousness as an active principle. My connection with love is my connection to source. Mm-hmm. I think of that as that's the primary driver, and that when I am disconnected from source, when I'm disconnected from love, that's when I am over-identifying with the circus acts. I've forgotten that I'm the tent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that to me is my metaphor. That's the way I can think about something that is bigger than is think aboutable. But it has to be my path. This is my path, my journey. And that's why I was asking about yours. Is it meaningful to you in that sense?
Yeah, it's totally meaningful, but it's you can't talk about it. It you know, whatever I want to say about it, it's not what it is.
No. I understand that. So how do you connect with that is unspeakable?
Well, you just have to know that it's there.
How do you? Not you said you. How does Marnik do that?
Yeah.
How do you do that? What is your journey, your way?
Yeah, well, I don't think I do it. I think I just know. I just know it's there. I just feel it's very present. And the fact that I know that it's very present has got to do with the fact that I'm not so much in my head anymore. And the more you get out of your head, the more you get out of this whole madness, this crazy circus, this mental circus that's going on, the deeper and the more profound the connection to love is. And I'm just aware of the fact, I can feel it right now because I know what it is. It has found me. It has found me. It has helped me when I quit drinking and I wanted to start drinking again, like 5,000 times a day for a year. It was very gentle. It was very subtle. It was not really a very overwhelming. I think love for me is clarity. And it sounds less sweet and less romantic and less...
I love the European siren. That's great.
There was an ambulance. Makes it very real, right?
It does. It does.
Police. Excuse me. Now I have to fiddle with my earphones as well. Oh, this is such a real conversation we're having here.
I know.
The thing with love is that you can talk about it and you can discuss it and you can say, claim it, that it's there and that you have it, that you feel it, and that it's so very important, but nobody really knows what it is.
No. And I certainly don't know what it is for you. This is the thing. I think each one of us has to experience it for ourselves. How do you tell someone
about deeply personal? Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, with coaching, I realize that it's never in the words. It doesn't mean a shit what I say in coaching. But when I come from love, people feel it. That's the only thing. That's the thing. That's the thing that makes a distinction.
That is brilliant. I agree. I completely agree. Because it's not it's certainly not changing others. It's changing me. And just at this time, listen, do you see the... Mm-hmm. This and here you are in the, just to give you a little bit, this is 11:11, and what's happening is that here in Austin and around the world, men, we testosterone-driven beings, there is a thing called the Circle of Men, and then there is a group called that is working through Clay Boykin, which is in search of the new compassionate male. How does the male show up, head and heart? How do we grow? How do we grow our EQ And how do we, men who were not trained that way, who were not trained by our fathers that way, or how do we grow in that way? We who have had this drug of testosterone coursing through our brains and bodies, how do we grow our emotional intelligence?
Yeah, it's like the new male, like the person that is very powerfully vulnerable, that is very, very comfortable talking about stuff that is personal for him, that doesn't care about looking a specific way or coming across a specific way, that just is so profoundly interesting to meet somebody who doesn't give a shit about how they're supposed to behave in order to look like something. And I totally agree.
Yes.
Somebody I talked to like a healer or something, or some psychic like half a year ago, and she said, you know, Marnix, you are going to be, and that's her words, you're going to be one of the people in the world who's going to lead this whole movement where guys show up in a completely different way, which is very powerful, but it's also with a feminine side. And being completely
it's integrated.
At ease with that. Yeah. I don't know
you
about
are.
That.
All right. Let me just say this. When I think I agree with that psychic.
Okay, cool, I guess.
I mean, and I only say this in this way, is that I know there is a deep resonance around the world for this. There is a deep need for this at this time in history. And I think it's there for anyone who is willing to claim it and take up the banner. Nobody's going to give you or issue the banner, but I see you taking it. I see you taking that banner, picking it up, and walking forward through your coaching, through your willingness to reach out to people, to use this nodal, interconnected world in order to spread this infection.
Mm. And I think the only way it works is because I don't really care about that. Hey, okay.
That's the point.
Yeah.
We can't. I cannot be invested. I think of it this way, that I work for me, is that I think of there are two ways of approaching it. I either am in the footwork or I'm in the results. I'm talking about as I'm doing a task or whatever it is. If I'm in the results, I'm manipulating. If I'm in the footwork, I'm doing what I am here to do, irrespective of what the results. I'm present, like in this conversation with you. I'm working to be as present as possible rather than, oh my God, I hope Marnix likes me. He's so smart and he's just so, oh, I really
handsome.
Would love it if he would just, and handsome. Oh my God, this guy is just like this chiseled.
He's the guy of guys. Yeah. Yeah.
I know. And oh, I want him to like me. I really want him to think that I'm okay. Yeah. Mm. Or I'm in the present and to be here with you as one human being to another. And those two, I can shift. I will shift back and forth during the conversation to that. But as I land more in being present, suddenly things open up that I couldn't, way beyond anything I could manipulate.
Have you seen that it's like you can use this, or you can develop this feel for the no bullshit zone, where you feel when you get out of it and you try to manipulate stuff and you go into the ego again, it just doesn't feel good. It just doesn't feel right. You get this extra sense for it, and then you go back like, yeah, no.
Yep.
Been there.
All right. So what is the opposite? What would you call the no bullshit zone?
Now, it's probably presence.
The present zone. Good. So it's the present. So it gives me something. Because it's just like you did in your TED talk when you kept talking about people, you kept asking people for 30 seconds not to think about any, all these things you kept telling each person not to think about, which is what we can't. So I work in my own consciousness to see when I say, well, I don't want to do this, or I don't want to do that, or I don't want to do that. Well, let's look at what I do want to do. Take that exact same phrase and look at what I want.
Yeah, you know, having this conversation reminds me of the fact how utterly simple my life is becoming. It's like you're asking all these questions and you go, I don't know. I'm so in the moment that I just developed this feel for my flow, for my own inner direction. It feels so normal. And yeah. And everything I tell about it sounds so pedantic and sounds so, yeah, I don't know. What the fuck do I know, man? I'm just playing around here.
Which every great spiritual teacher I have ever known says exactly that.
Well, my ego likes this.
Well, good. I'm thinking about that. Is it possible? Because we think about, and so much in the spiritual literature, I see that we try to banish the ego, or the ego's the enemy, or whatever it is. And I was just thinking about what it would be if, like my body, is there such a thing as a healthy ego, to where you could feed nutritive? I mean, there are certain non-nutritive things for my ego, things that just feed my ego that are like icing. They're not really, they give me a sugar high, but they don't last. But there are things that feed, that give me, what would a healthy ego look like, sound like, feel like, that would actually support me along the journey rather than being. So I'm trying to think about it in a different way, because I don't have an ability, nor do I want to banish the ego or to make the ego to be this thing that I want to avoid. I would like to have some peace there.
Well, you know, the joke is the only thing that would be interested in transcending the ego is the ego itself, because who would want to get rid of the ego? The person that wants that is the ego itself. So
said the ego.
Yeah, it's a big joke. You know, the ego. I see the ego. It's just the very interesting construct of all the things you think about yourself. That's what it is. It's like the feeling of being a person, which is constructed by the mind, by the egoic mind, by the personal mind. And it's completely harmless. I like it. It's okay. It's there. I think without an ego, you probably bump into things all day long, because you have this idea of feeling divided, or feeling, in a way, feeling apart from the world instead of being oneness, in order to be able to avoid tripping over stuff. Or, you know, I think you need an ego in order to feed yourself, or to go to the bathroom, or take a crap, or whatever. I know that one of the greater Indian sages, and I don't know who it was. Nisargadatta or some guy like that, or Advaita guy, he had this profound realization where his ego blew up, and the only thing he did for a few months was lay on the floor of a temple while he was being eaten alive by rats, and people in the village had to feed him because he couldn't care less about the whole body. So I think it's very useful to have an ego in that respect. And there's no such thing. So why would you waste time on transcending something that's not even real?
No. Well, that's why I was just wondering about what was healing. What would a healthy ego look like? So I'm working rather than transcending. So all right, let me ask you, in the last few minutes that we have, as I look up at the, what have we not talked about that would be cool, interesting, evocative to talk about in this last few minutes? And should you ever give me time to have another conversation, we can talk about other things.
Yeah. Well, when I realized just now when we were talking how simple my life has become, and how totally fine I am with what's happening in the world right now, I'm completely relaxed and very, still very sympathetic and empathetic. And I help my ass off. I do free webinars. I give my books away for free. I do free coaching sessions. I do everything I can do. And I feel totally fine, no matter what happens right now. And why? Well, because I stopped taking myself seriously.
It's the reason why angels can fly, is because they take themselves lightly.
Ah, yeah. There you go.
That is so wonderful. I mean, this is what I love about our conversation today, Mark, is that your presence brings out my presence. You help me by modeling your presence, your uncertainty, your living in the presence, the simplicity with which you're doing helps me to see where it is that I can do it in Dennis's way, the way you're doing it in your way. Each of us is going to manifest and bring it about in a different way. But I can learn so much from you by having this conversation, and that's what gives me the gift, such a gift for you for me today.
Yeah, thanks, and I really appreciate the fact that you reached out to me after watching my TED talk and inviting me for this conversation, because I love to talk about this stuff.
Wonderful.
Even if I don't know where it's going, or I'm not an authority on
exactly.
it whatsoever.
And I wasn't called, and that's the neat part about it. I wasn't, first of all, it's Renee Jaworski, my producer, who reached out. I'm going to give her all the credit for this wonderful, blessed connection. Second of all, is that we have an opportunity, having an opportunity to be present and to drop my bullshit, drop my, as much as I can, be as vulnerable and open as I can, to realize the simplicity in my own life, to be able to harmonize on that wavelength with another being whom I've just met, is incredibly graceful. It's as good as it gets. This is part of the journey, and I love how you are contributing in the ways that you can contribute, the ways you know that you can do this, and bringing the gifts to the planet, because this is a time when we're all connected, and the human being, this is the I have a feeling, Marnix, when the internet connected, it was like an artificial way of showing us how we are all connected. We're all actually connected. There's a race mind consciousness, like Jung talks about, that we are all connected. And the internet just showed us a way of artificially getting there until we evolve deeper into a way of connecting more over the planet. And you're leveraging that. So am I.
Pretty good job, right?
Isn't it a great job.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for the time today, Marnix, and I look forward to having another graceful conversation with you in
the future. Let's do it. Okay, man.